This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Lupe Sanchez. He's Santa Fe County DWI Program Manager, and Tom Stark, who is Chairman of the County's DWI Planning Council. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So we have all seen the End DWI and the many campaigns over the years of getting people not to drink while driving, which seems kind of like a no-brainer, but the problem continues. What's going on? Like, what does DWI look like here in Santa Fe and in this region?
Santa Fe has a major problem still with DWI, in spite of the fact we've made great progress over the last 10 years. DWI has fallen almost 40% in Santa Fe County in the last 10 years, and even this last year, 2014, 7 people died in DWI crashes, but in 2015, only 4 did. Now, of course, that's 4 too many.
Yeah.
But so...
Is that a long-term trend?
It is a long-term trend, and it's pretty much related to when we passed the ignition interlock law, our legislature, in 2005. And then before that, the state got really tough on DWI in the 10 years before 2005. So it's been a 20-year trend.
What do you attribute that to? I mean, is it these programs that are actually working?
All of the above. It's the programs that are working. The ignition interlock was a great device because before it, New Mexico was number 47, or number 3 worst. And after it, New Mexico jumped up down to number 24 worst. So we really made a huge jump with the best DWI ignition interlock law in the country.
Now, for those who have never heard of an ignition interlock, that is a device that is attached to your car where you actually have to blow into it and the device detects whether or not you have alcohol in your breath, and if you do, the car won't start.
That is correct.
And that is, I mean, what does the law say?
What the law says is that after a first DWI conviction, someone has to have the ignition interlock on their vehicle for 12 months. And even if they have a DWI arrest and they lose their license for that arrest, they have to have it on at least for 6 months before they can get their license back.
And that is still in effect and it's working.
It is still in effect. It's working. For second and third DWIs, the ignition interlock has to be on longer, 2 and 3 years respectively.
Now, does this cost the state a lot of money? Does it all sort of balance out in the wash by having fewer DWI problems? What are the economics of that?
Well, the economics of the ignition interlock costs about $2 a day for the person. And who got the DWI, the state doesn't pay anything.
Oh, okay.
And the state does have a fund that it builds up to pay for people who are indigent and can't afford the full cost of the ignition interlock, and that gets the cost down to roughly $1 a day for those individuals.
Yeah, the state designates a certain amount of funding through the liquor excise tax to help the indigent fund for the ignition interlock, and I believe it's in the neighborhood of about $300,000 a year, but that's statewide.
Now, what are the reasons that people are drinking and driving, you know, to the extent that they are? I mean, it's great that the numbers have gone down, but what's happening for the people who haven't quite gotten it yet?
I think for a lot of them, it's just not having been arrested. I think a lot of them are willing to roll the dice and don't truly understand the consequences that are associated with a DWI and how it really impacts an individual's lives. I think, what is it, Tom, on average that they drive somewhere in the neighborhood about 80, 90 times before they're actually caught?
80 or 90 times drunk.
Before they're actually caught.
That's a lot of drunk driving.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see it on the road.
Yeah, you can. It's out there. It's constantly out there, and it's it's concerning because our families are out there on the roads and they're driving amongst this population, so it's very concerning. And like the DWI program is doing all it can to educate the public on, you know, the impacts an individual faces when they are arrested for a DWI. We're just trying to educate people and let them know, you know, how it impacts their lives and all that they're required to do.
All that they're required to do?
If they are arrested for a DWI and get convicted.
So what do people have to do if they're arrested for DWI?
Well, there's a lot they got to do. The first thing is if they are arrested and they're booked into the jail, that's very traumatic on a lot of individuals, because what we got to keep in mind is DWI isn't prejudice, and anybody can be arrested for DWI as long as they get behind the wheel and they've been drinking. What we find through our program is we have all walks of life that come through our doors. So we have attorneys to doctors to, you know, people who are struggling in life. So it's not very prejudiced, the problem with alcohol and those that get behind the wheel. And that's one of the biggest things, is just getting arrested, getting booked into the jail, and having their mugshot taken. And then also the humiliation of having to call up a family member or a friend, asking them to come and post bail or come and get them out of the jail. That's also very impact on individuals when they are arrested. And then the whole court process is also a lengthy process and a traumatic process. And associated with that is the fees of an attorney. People don't understand the huge costs that a DWI causes. So I believe what are we looking at, between $5,000 and $10,000 for?
Well, $3,000 is probably the starting if someone's not indigent. Where the public defender would defend them for free or for $10. But typically $3,000, $5,000, $10,000 for the attorney to defend them, probably $500 to get their car out of impoundment and paying for the towing charge and whatnot. And then once they get convicted, there are all kinds of other requirements, and they all cost money. There's DWI school. There's getting an ignition interlock, which could be $1,000 a year when you add it all up. There's treatment that's required, especially if it determines they have a deeper alcohol problem. They may have many counseling sessions to go to, and they have to pay for those, or their insurance does. So the costs add up. It can cost $10,000, $12,000 to get a DWI, and for a lot of people, that's a lot of money that they don't have ready cash to pay.
What do they do?
A lot of them borrow from friends and relatives. Some of them go to the court and ask for reductions, and if they're really indigent, the court can waive some fees and some costs. There's an ignition interlock indigent fund that'll pay half the cost of the interlock. But a lot of people who are really indigent, if they had a car, lose it and they can't get it back because they can't even afford to pay the $500 or so dollars to get it out of impoundment or out of seizure.
So under what circumstances does the state take away your car?
Both the city and the county have ordinances in place, and it kind of governs when they can move in and seize a vehicle. And what we did back in 2013 is we amended the county's ordinance to mirror the city's. And what it says now is if you have one prior DWI conviction and you get arrested for a second DWI, or if you get arrested for driving on a revoke for DWI, either the city or the county can move in to seize that vehicle.
Well, in fact, in that case, the vehicle can be forfeited. You can lose it. Everyone who gets arrested by the city and the county for DWI has their vehicle seized and impounded, but they can go to the county and pay the fee and get it back unless they meet the requirements that Lupe just mentioned of a second DWI or driving revoked.
So there are a lot of things that you've just mentioned that people don't know about and come as a very cold surprise when they get their first DWI arrest.
Yes. The kind of things we hear, besides going to jail and the shock, because many of these people will never be to jail for anything else and have never been there before, and jail is a totally foreign experience for them. Having their car seized, about 10% of them end up losing their jobs because they can't keep their job with a DWI. Anybody with a commercial driver's license who drives for a living would probably lose their position. And other things we find people shocked by, people lose their scholarships. And they didn't realize their scholarship was contingent on their not getting a DWI because it was written into their contract. They're shocked that they have to get up every morning and call a number to see if they have to go in for a drug and alcohol test that day. And if they do go in for that test, it's a monitored or an observed urination. So somebody watches them pee. And that also is, they tell us, is very shocking. And there are other things that, you know, surprise us, and that is once you get a DWI, you get a mugshot in the system. And when somebody Googles your name, like if you get on eHarmony and you set up a date, the first thing they're going to see is your mugshot. And mugshots aren't your best picture. They're even worse than driver's license photographs.
Not attractive on the dating scene, ladies and gentlemen.
No, not at all.
And, you know, there's so many. Some people get their DWIs as a result of crashing their vehicles, and they come out seriously injured. Some people get their DWIs with their children in the car, and they get charged with child abuse. Or Children, Youth, and Families comes in and starts talking about taking their children away. And these are all consequences that we just can't believe people thought about or knew about, or they wouldn't have driven after drinking.
And there are, particularly in the city and in the county, there are other ways to get home.
Mm-hmm. There is. And one of them is the cab ride home, which is funded by the county. And that's funded through the liquor excise tax that we receive. But we offer that service Friday and Saturdays, and starting at 5:30 p.m. and it goes all the way to 2:30 a.m. So those are available. One of the popular things now is the Uber. And a lot of people are utilizing Uber, which is a positive thing.
Right.
But, for example, on average, on the Cab Ride Home program, which the county operates, we provide about 11,000 rides a year in that neighborhood. And we're usually servicing about 20,000 riders, because usually more than one rider when we provide the ride. So that's a positive thing, and it would be great if we could get more people to utilize it if they are out celebrating.
So what does it cost the passenger?
The passenger, the way it works is if there's one to two riders, it's $5 for the ride, up to 25. So the county will subsidize up to $25 of that ride.
And does the person have to have been drinking too much?
Well, they pick them up. They have to be from a liquor establishment or a house party. So if you are at a friend's house and you're having dinner and you've had a little too much wine and you decide not to drive, well, then the county will provide that service from a house party or and also from an establishment.
How do people access that?
All they got to do is call the cab company, and the number is 438-0000.
Okay.
Very, very simple number.
Through the cab company.
Yeah, put the number in your phone.
One of the things that people should know about, because this is crazy, you can be arrested for DWI for sitting in your car parked if you've been drinking too much. And this happened to a friend of a friend who got in her car, realized that she had been drinking too much, made a cell phone call to get somebody to pick her up, and was arrested for DWI, even though she was doing the right thing.
Yes. Yeah. It's just the way the law is written. A lot of people were pulling over and trying to sleep off their intoxication on the side of the road, and the legislature put this requirement in the law that even in a parked car, if I believe the individual is in control of that car, they can be arrested for DWI. And it's really heartbreaking when people who thought they were doing the right thing show up with a DWI because they were arrested drinking in a parked car. We wish everybody in Santa Fe knew that that's a DWI.
PWI.
DWI.
Parking while intoxicated.
Yes.
All right, so when people are arrested for DWI, some of them are bona fide alcoholics. Some of them are just people who've made a mistake. Young people make mistakes. Many of us have made those mistakes when we were young and didn't get caught, and then we figured it out and don't do it anymore. But it's not necessarily a sign that you need drug and alcohol treatment, things like that. How does the city or the county or the state evaluate where a person's at and whether they're really a danger to themselves and society and stuff like that?
Well, the county, once a person's convicted, we run the DWI compliance program. And from there, once they're referred to us, we set up appointments with them. And what we do is we send them out for an assessment, a clinical assessment. And it's not a 20 to 30 minute assessment, as a lot of people think. It's actually an hour to 2 hour assessment. So they're meeting with a clinician and just, you know, discussing a lot of issues that they may be undergoing. Because with a lot of people, there's a lot of underlying issues. So we have people who are dealing with, you know, they are molested as kids, where they have a bunch of different underlying issues. So they try to identify what the problem is and why these individuals are reverting to alcohol or substance abuse. And based on that assessment, then they refer them to the treatment program that would best fit that individual. So we got to keep in mind, we have a lot of people who deal with mental illness. So we need to incorporate addressing the mental illness as part of their treatment plan. So it's a thorough process, and these individuals are getting sent to the appropriate treatment providers in the county.
Now, are there sufficient treatment providers to deal with the problem? I mean, are there sort of more patients than doctors, so to speak, in this area?
No, I think Santa Fe County, the providers in the county do a good job, and we have enough out there. It's just linking them to the appropriate provider. That's the critical part. But Santa Fe County does have some good programs, such as the Santa Fe Life Link, Santa Fe Recovery Program, Mesa Vista Wellness. There's a bunch out there, and we have a lot of private therapists also that they can have access to.
What happens in the case of the person who it's assessed actually doesn't need mental health treatment or alcoholism treatment, or they weren't molested as children, they just made a dumb mistake? What happens to them?
Well, a lot of them, the assessment will point that out, and they'll be required to do different things. Some of them do the DWI class, Impact DWI program that Tom works closely with. There's just different things that they can be referred to do. So if we identify someone that doesn't have a problem, then they'll be dealt with appropriately, right? Maybe not being required to do anything.
They may not have to do a counseling session at all once the assessment is done. And there are many people. One of the stories we hear over and over again is a young lady will go out for the first or second time, and someone will say, "Here, try this Long Island iced tea." And it tastes just like iced tea, and she may have two of them. But there's a huge amount of alcohol in a Long Island iced tea, and all of a sudden, before she knows it, she's pulled over by the side of the road, and she discovers that she's wobbly, and gets a DWI. And this is not someone who has a problem with alcohol. They just had a problem with their education about alcohol, and they're getting a very expensive lesson. But that's not the kind of person who would go in for multiple sessions in treatment with a clinician because they don't need it.
Now, is the law nuanced enough so that somebody in that situation will be able to basically return and go about their lives with a slap on the wrist versus somebody who is a habitual DWI offender who just keeps on getting convictions?
The law is nuanced in the sense that multiple DWIs get more and more extreme sanctions. But everybody who gets a first DWI, whether it's someone who is just a serious alcoholic who'd never been caught, or someone like the young lady I described a moment ago, they would go through pretty much the same process. The treatment assessment would sort of say, well, the young lady didn't need much treatment, whereas someone who had a serious alcohol addiction, they would perhaps even suggest goes to a residential program and a detoxification program to heal their body.
Now, when people go through these detox programs and these residential alcohol treatment programs, I mean, I know somebody who went through that and got out and started drinking again immediately. It's a tough nut to crack.
Mm-hmm. Addiction is a real tough nut to crack, and I think you got to have intensive case management to better improve the odds of someone's success. So I think you have to have what they call a warm handoff. So if someone's coming out of an intensive program, they should have things lined up in place so when they get out, they have places to turn, such as AA if they want to pursue that, or other programs, community-based programs that are outpatient-based. So I think that's critical when someone is coming out of an inpatient program.
Well, And most critical is that they actually have to want to take care of their problem, which not everybody does.
No. And also having just a support system in place, because it is tough on the individual who's going through recovering from addiction, because there's a lot of stressors in life which can easily trigger something, where going back to old friends or whatever it may be. So having that support system in place is also very critical.
How many people in New Mexico drink versus people who just don't drink at all?
Well, the statistics are really interesting. About 49% of New Mexicans do not drink alcohol.
Adults.
Adults. So that would be 18 years and older. And of that, you know, 10 of those 49% are people who are in recovery from having previously struggled with alcohol, abuse, addiction, whatever. And then the other 51% are people who drink varying amounts. It's really only the 10% heaviest drinkers that really drink a great deal, like 8 drinks a day in the top 10% of drinkers. And what's unfortunate about that is that 8 drinks a day, someone is actually destroying their liver and going to feel very serious medical consequences of drinking.
We've talked about DWI, which stands for driving while intoxicated. Now, does that mean alcohol, or does it mean any number of other intoxicants?
It actually means driving while impaired.
Ah.
And it can be impaired by any substance. It could be alcohol, it could be drugs, it could be a combination of alcohol and drugs. Which is really one of the most insidious things, because someone may only have a glass of wine, but it may interact with a prescription medication, and it may very much impair their ability to drive. That's why people are always encouraged to test out their reaction with alcohol before they get and medicines before they get behind the wheel.
And it's important to keep in mind, because a lot of people think just because a doctor prescribed it that it's okay to take and get behind the wheel, but that's not the case. Because if you look at all the prescription medications, especially the one that can impair you, the OSA do not operate heavy machinery.
Right, and a car is a heavy
and
machine.
It could be a lethal weapon.
We're talking about DWI here in Santa Fe County with Lupe Sanchez and Tom Stark. Now, what are we doing to prevent DWI, whether it be in the schools, or what is the county doing?
Well, the county, we do go into the schools and provide prevention work. And over the last couple of years, what we've been focusing on is the younger students. Not to say we're excluding high school age and middle age school students, but 4th through 6th grade has been our primary focus. And what we're finding is when we target the kids at a younger age, it has a better impact. What we're trying to do is change just our way of thinking. It's very common when I was growing up to be attending family parties and you see people drinking and then getting behind the wheel. And what we're trying to do is change that way of thinking amongst the kids, especially because kids are a powerful voice. You know, if a parent's drinking and the kid sees it and the parent's getting behind the wheel, and if a kid asks the parent not to do it, it's very emotional on the parents, and,
yeah,
and it's very strong. So we're trying to change the behaviors there with the young kids. We provide evidence-based curriculums in the schools. And so what we do is we contract with providers that actually go into school and do these curriculums. So we do programs such as Protecting You, Protecting Me, Keep a Clear Mind, the Alcohol Literacy Challenge. So there's different curriculums that we provide in the schools. We also go into the high schools and spread the message there also. And just what we try to do there is educate on the dangers of drinking and driving. Because a lot of times in the high school, a lot of people already have their minds made up. So we're trying to educate them on not to get behind the wheel and the dangers associated with it. We also go into the College of Santa Fe University of Art and Design. You can tell I'm getting old because it's the College of Santa Fe.
Yeah, yeah.
But the Santa Fe University of Art and Design. And we have a special class for the incoming freshmen. And just letting them know about the dangers of drinking and driving, and all that goes with it here in Santa Fe. And then providing information regarding the cab ride home program, that if you are going to go out in the city, these are what's available for you. So there's a lot of work that's done in the schools.
Do you mention texting while driving when you do all this stuff?
Yeah, that's, we do focus on that. We do focus on some bullying in the school, so there's different things that the curriculums incorporate.
We also work with the Santa Fe Community College and their prevention coordinator to try to get the word about among those students about drinking and driving, as well as about alcohol abuse, and they have a very strong, effective program at the community college.
Is the designated driver practice something that people are doing?
It's interesting you ask that because we met with law enforcement a few weeks ago as part of our strategic planning exercise, and one of the officers brought up that he was really surprised this year, more and more times when he's pulled people over suspecting DWI, he's found a designated driver driving several impaired people home. And he said it's really seeming to catch on in our community that having a designated driver is the way to go. So that's the kind of development and good behavior we're really excited about seeing.
I am the, of course, designated driver at all times. One person is always going to get stuck with that role, it seems like.
Well, but in fact, we have to honor that role
if we can. Yeah, no, it's fine. It's all good. Anything else you want to let people know before we go?
Just please don't drink and drive, and please think about the example you're setting for everybody around you, and don't drink and drive.
And just remind people that the cab ride home is available to everybody out there.
438-0000.
Exactly. So if you do go out, please take the cab ride home or utilize the Uber service. So there's no excuse. It's totally preventable. So just use those services.
And get home safe.
Mm-hmm. Lupe Sanchez and Tom Stark, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design. Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.